Welcome to Spiritual Grit, the podcast where we talk real talk about spirituality through the lens of activism and social justice. What happens when activism and spiritual practices collide? What sparks of change call for the grit we need to create meaningful strides in social justice? I'm your host, Leslie Ann Hobayan, poet, priestess, activist, professor, hip-hop dancer, and badass mama. Join me as we dive in to learn more about our deepest selves so that we can be better ancestors to create a stellar world for our descendants. Grab your dancing shoes and let's get groovy with the grit right now. Hello, loves. Welcome to another episode of Spiritual Grit. How are you on this beautiful day? I hope wherever you are feeling good in your neighborhood. It's funny, you know, it's been a long time. When I put out podcast episodes, I don't listen to the intro. So it's been a while. It's been a minute since I've listened to it. And I'm like, wow, that's some really fun music. I listened to it earlier and I was like, yeah, I'm digging this. I really like it. So I hope y'all are liking it too. But yeah, hello, welcome. I have so many things that are happening in the world that are vying for our attention. Yes. And how do we focus? How do we stay grounded? How do we not lose our minds? Because I don't know about y'all, but it's so easy to lose your mind, to lose your shit, you know. And so what I like to do is, besides take naps, is to consult the tarot and to talk with y'all. Because when we talk and express what's within us, it's an opportunity for it to get released out of our bodies, right? When we keep things in, physically, somatically, our bodies start to tense up. It'll show up as, you know, like tight neck and shoulders, maybe locked jaw, headaches, low back issues, you know, that start to ache, maybe hip issues. So your body is talking to you all the time. What are you doing to do to care for that, to pay attention to it? And it's not just physical, right? It's not just physical care. Yes, physical care is important. Hydrating, eating the right foods that nourish your body, movement, these are all great. But if you are not helping to pay attention to nourish, to heal your soul, to listen to your heart, to allow for emotions to emerge, then it's only half the job of care. Because your body is the truth teller. Your body's going to say, you know what? You need to just lie down. You've been eating all the right things. You've been, you know, taking the walks. You've been breathing mindfully, but you haven't been telling anyone or expressing, not even telling anyone, just expressing your feelings, the things that are happening within you. And I know for a lot of us, in Western cultures, expressing ourselves emotionally is, if it's low vibration or seemingly negative emotions, it's discouraged. You know, people are like, no, I you're depressing me. I don't want to hear it. I mean, some people might say that, but it's not always that, that rough, but there is that understanding, this sort of unwritten rule that if you're going to cry, I don't want to see it. Like, go hide. You're crying somewhere. If you're in grief, it's awkward and uncomfortable for me. I don't know how to handle that. So a lot of us are taught when we're really little to repress that, to hold it in. And so now there's so much grief happening in the world with the genocide in Palestine, with the war in Sudan, the crazy, you know, maltreatment of the folks in the Congo. It's a lot energetically for us to take in. And not everyone is aware that these energies are happening, but our bodies can feel it. Even though it's on the other side of the world for us who live in the United States, we can sense that there is an immense grief. There's a lot of pain. And maybe we lash out at people unexpectedly and we're like, oh, what's that? Why did I do that? Where did that come from? It's unexpressed emotion. And if you don't know that the emotion is there, then you don't know to express it, right? So one of the things that we can do is to just constantly express ourselves in ways that feel good in our bodies. You know, it could be dancing, it could be, you know, getting messy with finger paints or watercolors. It could just be, you know, grounding in the earth by placing your hands on some grass or in a potted plant in the dirt itself. Like really accessing those senses, so that you can open those portals of expression. Because I feel that when we are called to express, when our bodies want to express, which, you know, another definition of expressing is to release. You know, I remember from when I was nursing my kids when they were babies, you know, the lactation consultant would talk about expressing the milk from the breasts, right? And so it's a release of that pressure that's building up. So that's what we are doing. And maybe we don't know what the emotions are that we're expressing, but we just need some kind of release. We need to show the world that we are here and this is the thing that I made. Here's what I'm creating, right? So for all of you who are feeling that, please, you know, let's take care to do that. And of course, like I'm going on, like I'm going to talk to you already for the episode. And I'm like, yeah, let's keep going. But, you know, I like to start the episode with the card from the tarot, the Lightseer's tarot deck. And today we've got the Ace of Swords that has come forward. Now, if you've been listening for a while, you know, the suit of swords for me always feels sharp. I mean, to be literal and punny at the same time. The suit of swords feels like a slap in the face, maybe, you know, where it's like you need to pay attention. But the swords suit is about expression. You know, here I'm talking already about expression. And so it's about expressing the mind, expressing our ideas. It's about communication, our thought processes. So how timely, right? I was just talking about expressing ourselves and releasing our what's inside our bodies. And here we are with the Ace of Swords. Now, this is what the guidebook has shown us. This card represents new ideas, clarity, an aha moment, truth revealed, awareness and heightened states of consciousness, memory or thought, communication, victory, success and triumph, a stroke of genius. So out of the suit of swords, I want to say this is probably my favorite card out of the suit, because every time I get any other card out of the suit of swords, I'm like, I don't know. I mean, maybe the King of Swords might be a good one because I'm at the end of the journey. But the Ace of Swords is great. so here we go. Massive clarity is on the way. A new door is opening up for you. Sounds cool. Often unveiling a life-changing idea or a significant spiritual breakthrough. Now, I'm going to pause for a second and say, you might get excited. A significant spiritual breakthrough, you're like, yes, but you know what that means. It means it's going to be super uncomfortable. So before you get all yes about it, remember, spiritual breakthroughs are hard as you know what. I'm trying not to curse on this podcast as much, but you know, whatever, it'll be what it is. So continuing on, expect aha moments of lucidity to pierce your awareness and to reveal a totally fresh vision for the future. As this essence spirals into comprehension, use this time to see things as they really are and to tune in to new beginnings. Okay, so let me read that again. Use this time to see things as they really are. Now, in one of the programs that my mentor has offered, there's an exercise that she invites us to do. It's called pure seeing, right? And pure seeing is just looking at things as they are. A lot of us, I mean, our default is to create meaning out of things. You know, everything is neutral. We are the ones that assign meaning to it. And the meaning that we assign to it is largely based on past experiences, on our history, on our upbringing. And so the challenge, and I notice that this is a challenge, is to look at something just what you literally see. So for example, let's take the tarot card, right? what am I seeing in this card? Well, if I'll let me describe it to you. It is a side profile of a woman, and her head is a spiral staircase. And there is, you know, light shooting out of it. Now, that is pure seeing. Then I say, oh, there's a crow that's flying over her head. That's it. That is the pure seeing. Now, if I were to assign meaning to it, then I might say, okay, well, maybe the spiral staircase that's like where her brain would be, right, is an indication of either coming up or going down. And the light shooting out from the center of it is the aha moment, is this like beacon of light in the spiraling of ideas, the spiraling of emotions that sometimes we feel. And this shooting light out of the center is the guiding light to get out of the darkness. That is how I'm interpreting it. But pure seeing would just be like, okay, it's a woman, profile, closed eyes, a staircase, spiral staircase, light, and a crow. That's it. So can you take that pure seeing and apply it to your situation to see things as they really are? And then tune into new beginnings. So do you see possibilities for fresh starts? The quiet insight of the unconscious mind is being made available for you. So you may experience a rapid expansion of your conscious mind. Oh, no, sorry. So you may experience a rapid expansion as your conscious mind integrates this newfound information. Know that nothing can compete with the fierce rays of wisdom and truth. So if you are finding yourself with clouded judgment or with stalled thinking, it's time to seek the brightly lit energy of honesty. Gather your discernment, your intellect, your logic, and your insight, and clearly communicate the truth that is bubbling up to be witnessed. And the mantra that comes with this card is, I experience brilliant moments of clarity. Now, I want to backtrack a little bit. This statement of gather your, if you're finding yourself with clouded judgment or with stalled thinking, it's time to seek your brightly lit energy of honesty. So you want to be honest, right? We want to seek the truth and stand in our truth, which these days can be scary if you don't have support. The next part, gather your discernment, your intellect, your logic, and your insight, right? To clearly communicate the truth bubbling up in you. Now, let's say you have this idea or this fresh start, this thing that you want to do, but you don't have support. You feel that people are going to make fun of you, or people are going to abandon you, or you're going to fail, or, you know, the worst, think of the worst that's going to happen. You can get hurt, harmed in some way. There's this fear, right? And so you're like, well, how am I supposed to do that? How am I supposed to do this hard thing that feels scary, that feels potentially unsafe? So here's the thing. That's what the discernment is about, right? To look at your fear, to really investigate that fear. This is where the pure seeing comes in, right? Investigate the fear and ask yourself, is this fear truly about keeping me safe? Like, for example, you know, there's a fear of, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't walk into the street full of traffic, right? The fear is going to protect me from getting run over, right? But what if the fear is, so notice the quality of fear for that, right? The quality of fear, like the texture of that fear of, ooh, if I step out into traffic in the middle of the street, what's the quality of that fear? You know, is it big? Is it graspy? Is it cold? Does it grip you like an icy claw? You know, like really pay attention. That's what the discernment is. It's about practicing tuning into that subtle energy quality. So imagine that fear of like, you know, I got to get to the other side of this highway and I'm going to cross the street, but I see all this traffic and these cars are going like 80 miles an hour, that's scary and I should listen to that fear so I don't get run over. Okay, so there's that fear, that quality of fear. And then imagine the fear of, like, I don't know, speaking your truth about genocide, you know, and you're afraid that people won't love you. You're afraid that people will abandon you. You're afraid that people will, you know, you'll just be alone. And in that loneliness, in that isolation, you will curl up and die. You know, that it, is it worth it? You start to ask yourself, is it worth it for me to speak up against genocide? What am I willing to risk? And that fear, tune into that fear. What's the quality of that fear? Is it this kind of like shaky fear where your hands start to get clammy? Is it a fear that feels expansive? I mean, that sounds funny, right? But there are kinds of fear that feel like contractions, and then there are like you kind of curl into yourself, and then there is a quality of a kind of fear where you feel expansive, where you start to feel your body actually open up. You know, I think about like some people love roller coasters. I do not. But some people love roller coasters. And I can imagine that the fear of that drop when you peak the hill, you climb up that incline, that hill, and then at the peak, you're about to just drop down. I mean, it's that adrenaline rush, right? Is that fear expansive or is it contracting? For me, it's contracting because I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to die. But a lot of people get excited by that. And so maybe their experience of that fear is a quality that's expansive. So when it comes to speaking out against genocide, is your fear expansive or does it contract? And I think that people will have different experiences of it. So there's no right or wrong. These are just questions for you to consider because I am curious about why there is so much silence in literary communities, for example. You know, we are supposedly, you know, rumor has it that the poets and the writers and the dreamers are the soothsayers, the truth tellers, the ones who bear witness to the things that are unfolding. We are the ones who are seeing, right? We are seeing things for what they are. We are doing the pure seeing and documenting that and recording that in our stories, in our poems, in plays, in songs. And I feel that in the Western world, in the United States, that is not happening as prevalently, as huge as I would think it to be. I'm not surprised because of the capitalist structures that we live within, but I don't know. I'm kind of baffled by it. Not surprised again, but just baffled by the silence from many, many, many arts organizations, literary communities, authors, poets. I mean, the silence is really like, are you sure you guys are doing what this vocation has asked us to do? I feel that a lot of folks are turning away or sort of shrugging and be like, well, what can you do? Or, you know, you can't get away from it, whatever. And I can't wrap my head around it. But maybe it's because the quality of their fear is one of contraction, or they don't listen to their body. You know, maybe their body is giving them this experience of fear that expands, but they ignore it because they only see it as fear. They haven't tuned in. They haven't discerned and tuned into the quality of that fear. You know, so for example, the other day someone had said to me something about Starbucks. I don't remember what it was, but it was like, one of our mutual friends was heading over there to do work, and I was like, I'm boycotting Starbucks. And she was like, yeah. She's like, but at this point, isn't everybody complicit? I mean, it was this like throwaway comment of, well, what difference does it make? You know, it's like everyone has their hands in the pot in some way or another. And I was just like, oh, okay. I thought this person was different. I thought because they are to a certain extent an activist, but now I'm like seeing maybe they're not anymore. Maybe they've gotten old and established and have been enmeshed in the system where they don't even realize that. So it was a little disappointing for me to hear that comment, because I was like, okay. I mean, yes, I understand that some of the things that I do and, you know, some of the places I buy from may be invested in not so great practices. But when it comes to overt involvement, you know, we're talking about the boycott, divest, sanctions movement, also known as BDS. You know, Starbucks is one of them that's like, no, we don't do Starbucks because that and McDonald's, we do not. And so for that sort of dismissive comment to come from my friend, I was like, oh, wow. Okay. So these are the things that I'm noticing, you know, when it comes to the silence in the literary communities. And I don't know what to do about that. I just do my thing. You know, I just keep writing my poems and my stories that bear witness to what I need to bear witness to. You know, I've got my Substack where I am continually sharing and posting my experiences of the world as someone who is advocating for Palestine, and expressing my grief, you know, coming back to the expression of our emotions and expressing my rage, you know, and that is what I can do. And I can also do my own version of sanctions. You know, the other day I had learned about Vanderbilt University's actions towards some students who were demonstrating in support of Palestine. And, you know, from what I understand, was a peaceful protest. And not only did they treat the student protesters who staged a sit-in, did they treat them inhumanely by depriving them of water and access to bathrooms. They also suspended some students and expelled three students. Now, this happened last week, so I haven't followed up to see if anything has changed, but I do know there have been calls for action to demand that the administration reverse their decisions. But when I found that out, I immediately felt sick to my stomach. Like my body, you want to talk about truth teller, my body was like, we are going to throw up, girl. You know, I was like, okay, we need to do something about this. Because my poetry manuscript I had submitted to Vanderbilt University's Literary Prize a month ago or so. And knowing that my work was there, being considered for the Literary Prize and being associated with the university just made me queasy. I was like, no, I can't. I can't trust my work to be cared for, to be honored, to be in integrity if the university as an institution cannot honor freedom of expression, freedom for protest, you know, and by these actions, they are showing that they are not on the side of humanity. And so I withdrew my submission from the Literary Prize. And I was like, you know, if this like torpedoes my career in poetry, okay, you know, whatever. It's just a career. It's not my life. And it's not, you know, my well-being. It's not going to deprive me of food and water and shelter, which is what a large number of Gazans and Palestinians in general, because there's stuff going on the West Bank too, my friends, they don't have that stuff. And so my discomfort is small compared to what they are going through. And I know it's not useful to compare, but it gives perspective. You know, everyone's situation is different. When I say it's not useful to compare, it's like, yeah, it's not useful to compare because our circumstances are totally different. But it's useful for us to look at other people's situations and circumstances in order to give us perspective on our own individual experience of life in the world. Not to feel guilty, but to say, hey, you know what? They're going through that. I can do this smaller thing. I can be uncomfortable for a little bit while I watch the resilience of the Palestinian people under such duress continue to thrive. So they are my inspiration, where I'm like, okay, I'm going to withdraw my manuscript from this institution's poetry prize. And that's it. You know, it was a no-brainer kind of decision. But I don't understand how other people don't. That's not a default for them. I know that that there are some folks who were nominated for or longlisted for the a lot of the Pen American literary prizes. It was announced last week, and a handful of authors have requested that their book be withdrawn from the nomination in protest for Pen America's silence on genocide. You know, their response is like, well, we want to point to the letter that we addressed, the open letter we addressed to the community, that we are calling for a ceasefire. You know what? No, dude, like one letter, like you are not doing any, as an organization, you are not doing anything to help the situation. You're not doing anything to help Palestinians, to help call for a ceasefire. You have one stupid letter and that's it. And the rest of your actions do not show us anything. Actions speak louder than words. And Pen America's actions are very minimal, if there are any actions beyond that open letter. So all this to say that the invitation is to discern your fear, right? To tune in and ask yourself, okay, this aha moment is coming. The Ace of Swords is showing that new beginnings are afoot and spiritual breakthroughs are coming. Do I run and hide because it's uncomfortable, or can I tune into the fear and understand that the quality of the fear can be expansive, and that I will move towards that and say yes to that? And one way to do that is to express, you know, to care for the body, like I said earlier, and express what's within, whether we can name it or not, whether we can identify it or not. Sometimes we just put words on a page and that is enough. Sometimes we doodle on the margins of our notebook and that's enough. Sometimes we just want to, you know, play with Play-Doh with our hands and that's enough. But what in you is calling to be expressed? I mean, it can be singing, right? I love singing. So yeah. If you are feeling overwhelmed, stressed out, burnt out, whatever it is, rest, of course, yes. Take naps, eat good food, but also take some time to express yourself. I can't help but think about the Madonna song, Express Yourself, right? But it could be anything. It could just, you know, be finger paints and just putting your fingers in some paint and blobbing it on some paper. You can do whatever. I'm like, I'm drawing a blank because I'm like, ooh, that sounds like so many fun ideas I want to try right now. You can collage, you can do whatever floats your boat. That's the thing. You gotta find what feels good and don't overthink it. To let the mind, the thinking mind, rest while you do these modes of expression. So, my friends, that is what I have for you today, right? To discern your fear, what's the quality of the fear, to express yourself, to really tune into the body for what is needed, and to not be afraid, even though there is fear, right? If it's the expansive fear, keep going because everyone is supporting you. And if you don't have physical people around you, know and trust that you have good ancestors who have your back. They're there around you all the time. All you have to do is tune into them, spend time with them, ask them for help. They can't help and intervene until you ask. So if you feel alone on your journey for truth and speaking your truth, call on the good ancestors. They're there waiting for you. I promise. All right. So on that note, I'm going to, oh, what's this poem? I got a poem from Hafez, the great Sufi mystic poet. And this one just opened up and it says, the title is Wow. You ready for it? Okay. Wow. Where does the real poetry come from? From the amorous sighs in this moist dark when making love with form or spirit. Where does poetry live? In the eye that says, wow-wee. In the overpowering felt splendor every sane mind knows when it realizes our life dance is only for a few magic seconds. From the heart saying, shouting, I am so damn alive. Whew. Love that one. Love that one. All right, friends. I hope you all have a beautiful week, that you are able to tune into your body, looking for guidance on how to express yourself, how to stay true to you. And until next time, the divine light in me bows to the divine light in you. Namaste. If you're feeling like fighting the good fight is bringing you down and hope is starting to fade, grab my free 7-day meditative challenge, Spark Joy in Chaos, by signing up for my newsletter, which will be more light to your inbox. Go to suryagyan.com/subscribe.